For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way toward salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides, Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave.
Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave, or caves as it happens to still be. We've divided up. Everybody's in their respective caves. I'm Kent Blanford in my cave. We've got Timothy O'Donnell in his cave, Mark Tuttle in his cave, and we are joined by Judge Scott Cirk in his respective cave. And our subject tonight, we're going to look at the law. And one of the things I've always wondered is, if you're a judge, can you bring your Catholicism to the bench? How does that work?
Hey, that's great. Well, that's a great lead-in. And Judge Cirk, you're such a great friend of the show. Thanks again for being on. But yeah, let's start by putting you on the spot. So what do you think? I mean, can you be Catholic and still wield some very important authority?
Well, I'll answer it the way a greater judge than I answer, and that's Justice Scalia, Anton Scalia. And he said that the Catholicism was the great part of his life. It dominated his life. But as a judge, he had to approach that from the discipline of the law. So that's really how I try to do it. My major goal in life, with being a good father and husband, is to be a good Catholic Christian. However, when I act as judge, I have to follow the discipline of the law and apply the facts of the law. For me personally, I hope I live my faith and that people know I'm Catholic. But I have to apply the law fairly in each situation, similar to what Justice Scalia said. Whether you're Catholic or not, you have to approach the law in the proper legal understanding of the law. It should be the same for everyone. But, our faith should be our most important aspect of our life. I mean, that goes to our eternity. That's our spirit over the body type of thing. So it is the most important, as opposed to the temporal things of today that we live in this time span that we're in here. That is eternity, and that's what Catholicism teaches and encourages.
You know, it came to mind to me that one of the most stinging indictments as a Catholic one might face would be something along the lines of a close companion or friend or someone you've known, a colleague you've worked with for many, many years, even decade or decades, one day says to you, "Oh, Tim, I didn't know you were Catholic." You know, that would really sting, you know,
because somewhere I
done something horribly wrong along the way. You know,
somewhere I had read.
It goes to that old that old joke, you know, if you were ever accused of being a Catholic, would they have enough evidence to convict you?
Right. Right.
Correct. Somewhere I had read where and I can't remember the specifics on this, but a law partner was Catholic and his partner was not, and he was dying, and that was the first time he mentioned it to him. And the man who was dying said, "If it was so important to you, you never mentioned my entire life. I'm not going to, why do it just now?" So I do think that's an important part of it. And, go ahead, Mark.
I was going to say, well, we're lucky enough to live in a time, in a culture, in a place where, you know, that there's not a lot of conflict, I think, between being a good Catholic and the law. You know, I think of St. Thomas More, who was, you know, kind of forced to lay down his life for his faith in the face of, basically being asked to do things as a lawyer that violated his his faith. So, I think we're very fortunate that we don't have a huge number of conflicts. But do you ever feel a tension there between your life as a lawyer and your belief and faith as a Catholic?
Yes, I do. And I can see it even getting more so that way. I think, I do think the marriage issues is going to be one that could be causing that to have a huge tension in the future. I think what we're have happening is that, the world is getting more and more secular, not anything like Thomas More faced, but I think it is getting there, and I can see that getting even more extreme. The easiest example in the marriage case is in 2008, President Obama's policy was that marriage was only between a man and a woman. By the end of his term, if you believe that, it was almost determined to be racist or the equivalent of that. So things are changing, and they're changing quickly.
Yeah. Let me, I was going to ask, Scott, maybe for my benefit and benefit maybe with some of the listeners, I want to zoom out for a minute and start with that term law. So if I were thinking about a young person, and I'm thinking about maybe studying law or preparing to study law. Maybe I just graduated from high school. What is it? I hear the word law all the time. I know there's laws. Maybe you've gotten a speeding ticket or something already. When you hear the term law, what comes to mind? What's sort of a good practical working definition of that?
Applying justice fairly in society. Equally to all individuals would be my first response. That's the purpose of the law, that it's fair to everyone, no matter what their station in life is. And I think that's what I think of it in that regard. That's what we try to do, particularly as judges, is apply that equally and fairly to all who are before us.
That conjures to mind to me why the image of Lady Justice is blindfolded, right?
Right. That's really how it should be. I shouldn't favor people who agree with me, Lady Justice should be blind and apply it equally to all before them. And I think that's the key to our justice system. And whenever we see it being applied arbitrarily, it hurts us all.
Mm-hmm. I think as Americans, we can be very, very proud to a good extent of our justice system, that we kind of do live up to that ideal for the most part. I mean, obviously there are injustices here or there. Obviously there's times where Lady Justice doesn't seem to be quite as blindfolded as she ought to be. Looking back, I think at kind of where law came from, the system of justice in Greece, in Rome, here, what do you think allows American justice to be kind of far superior to some of the other systems that are out there?
If you think it's far superior.
I think we're very blessed with our form of government that is the basis for our law, our founding documents, the Revolution, presented the first time that every man was equal. It wasn't a status in any way. And I think our Constitution does that. The Federalist Papers make that very clear. That was the thing with Scalia. He felt the Constitution ensured justice for all individuals, and that we should follow the Constitution as it was written. Of course, now when I think of that, the injustice that we have from our system, the greatest one is slavery. However, the founding documents, and this was Lincoln's argument, the founding documents limited slavery so that it was inconsistent with our founding documents. Washington and Jefferson believed that as well. And that was Lincoln's point. And had we left it alone, it would have died without the necessity of a civil war. So, but ultimately, I think the American experiment is a true revolution, greater than France and other examples of it that have happened since or even before. And it was based on the equality of men and women before the law. And I think that is, you know, not status, not like what Thomas More faced with Henry VIII. None of that is in our system or makeup. Now, I think political correctness and the increase of secularism is challenging that, but I do think our systems are, our legal system in particular, is great enough that it will overcome that challenge, as it has the one of the South for the slavery and others like that.
What sort of responsibilities, and I know we don't have a lot of time here before our first break, but maybe get us started. What are some of the responsibilities that you think are incumbent upon the citizenry to shoulder in order to have a society that is governed by the rule of law? What should we be thinking about?
To be informed. I think the citizens should be informed. And also to welcome debate, not to try and stifle debate, not try to demonize your opponents, but look at all values or to look at all arguments and encourage debate about that. I think those are things that the citizens deserve. When our politics gets too partisan, the fault for that is us, the citizens. Mm-hmm. We've allowed that. We've encouraged that. I think encouraging debate, encouraging civility, those would be great things to do even more for our citizens.
And with that, we need to take a break, and we'll be back with more of The Catholic Cave right after this break. You're listening to The Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy.
Alexa, what's the weather forecast for today?
Alexa, what time is the Colts game today?
Alexa, remind me to pick up the dry cleaning tomorrow.
Has Alexa become a part of your daily routine? Then make sure that routine includes Alexa, play Catholic Radio Indy.
Catholic Radio Indy.
Quick, easy access to Catholic programming 24/7. Just say, Alexa, play Catholic Radio Indy.
Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to the Catholic Caves. I'm Tim O'Donnell, and in the caves, in our respective caves, forming one large cave, let's say, it's our producer Kent Blandford and trusty sidekick, Mark Tuttle, of course, and delighted to spend more time here with a good friend of the show, great Catholic too, Judge Scott Cirque. And we've been talking a little bit about the law, and right before the break, and where I want to pick up is, we were talking about, Scott, you're talking about the importance of citizens being informed. And I have to confess something. And since I can't get to confession under the current circumstances, I feel like I'm going to do it right now and right here. So, Mark, give me an absolution, buddy. I know you can't do that. But here's the thing. When it comes to certain elections, so I live in Fishers. You know, it's by in the big scheme of things, pretty small town. But I do vote, and I do make a very deliberate effort to stay informed of the issues and things like that. And, you know, at the presidential level, kind of easy to do that. A lot of information, a lot of media coverage, move down to vice president and then Congress. But when it gets local, there's some of these local offices. I can be honest with you, I'm not even sure. It's not that I'm in the booth. I realize, one, there is that office, and two, there's actually one or two people running. And I haven't done my research. So Is that what am I doing wrong there? I mean, is that a big miss on my part, or what are your thoughts there?
You're not doing anything wrong, Tim. I think it's our culture that we live in today. We focus on the celebrity or the famous, and we know more about people in Washington, D.C. and Los Angeles than we do in Fishers, or in my case, in Greenfield. I'm a judge in Hancock County, or in Indianapolis. And really, the people in your local offices, your local county council, your auditors, they're the people that probably affect your lives more than what Donald Trump or Joe Biden ever will. You know, G.K. Chesterton had a great line: you should keep your politicians close enough that you could hit them. And there's some truth to that, because they really have the effect on your life. But we don't pay enough attention to those positions. And before I was a lawyer and I was voting, I would vote in all. I just figured I'd vote for every office. But once I became informed as to how important county council is and what you need to know, or auditor or treasurer, if I didn't know the people, I scratch. I don't just go in there and guess or say I like that name or I, you know, don't like this name, that type of thing.
Onesie Tuesday.
Yeah. I happened to run in 2018. I was in an election, and my son was away at college. It was very important to my wife and I, and we knew all the candidates in there. And for one of the races, my wife instructed my son who to vote for. He went in there and forgot, and he voted for the candidate she didn't like. She let him know she didn't approve of that. So those things can happen. And, you know, if you don't know, I always advise people not to vote, because subsidiarity, which is another thing Chesterton and Catholicism speaks a lot about, is important. It's probably the better way. The people that are closest to you make the most important decisions that affect your life. Not to say that, president is extremely important, but we need to have a balance. So it would be better if our attention or our notice was more local than it is so much national.
You know, the decisions flow down. That's kind of the way politics works. So when tax policy is debated and set at the state level, that then affects the counties, and the reaction of the counties then affects the cities and the local governments. And they're really the ones that in a lot of ways are left kind of holding the bag, having to implement what the decisions were upstream. And they're also the ones that have to deal with the consequences of either not having enough money or not having enough programming put in place, that then they're the ones that have to make the decisions of how to adapt and how to deal with this and how to make it. So you're exactly right. In a lot of ways, the further, the more local a position is, the more real life, I think, their decisions and who they are and their character affects.
Well, that's a hard part about local government, because particularly in the COVID crisis, funding is not available. So jobs, I was just at a board meeting involving our community corrections, and jobs are going to have to be cut. And there are people and names we know, but the funding's not there. So that's a sad and tragic part of this whole thing. Hopefully it'll be a temporary layoff and they can be rehired, but that's part of it. Yeah. And that's a very good point, Mark. Very good point.
Now you had brought up the Catholic social principle of subsidiarity. So, and you know, that's just one of several kind of, general justice principles that are kind of taught by Mother Church, to kind of guide us not only in our own personal lives, but guide us as citizens, and guide policy, and guide states, and guide decisions like that. How closely and how far away do you feel like our system tends to track along with what the church teaches about social justice? I know that's a tough.
That's a very good question. As far as I think that our system is very conducive to Catholic thought, really, as far as how it's applied. And in some ways, it's the best legal system for Catholic thought, with justice being blind. However, there is a factor in it that's always been part of America. I know Archbishop Chaput has talked about this at different times. His great books, you know, I recommend everything he's ever written, but he's talked about this, that there's, you know, in American history and all that, there's always been the thing that we have a Roman master somewhere back there, the Pope, and that. So that affects somewhat of the approach in America, that they were somewhat questioned. But in actuality, in actual philosophy, I think the American system and Catholic system of justice is really very conducive and compatible. But there is that aspect because of the Protestant Reformation. The founders were not, you know, they were from the split of with Luther and also Henry VIII at the time, and then the effects of the Enlightenment.
Yeah, part of the beauty of our system is left to us to make it what we want. You know, the founding fathers were very clear that this system only works if we have a moral public, and part of that is because it's the character, and I would say the religion too, of the people, that then sort of informs what the laws are and informs sort of what the policies are. Do you see that playing out still? That kind of, I guess, the morality or the immorality, whatever the case may be, tends to trickle up on our society.
Well, and there's more of a challenge in that. And, you know, John Adams in particular said, even though he was, you know, he certainly wasn't Catholic, and his Christianity wasn't the major focus, but he said this type of government was meant for Christian people. Adams, Washington, both implied that. And there is, we are less Christian than we used to be. You know, I'm 58 years of age, and in my lifetime, I think we've become a more secular nation. And, the TV shows of Dick Van Dyke and, have changed totally the whole approach to what we have on Netflix and TV, and the whole, you know, the whole respect for marriage, for fathers. All, you know, we went from Father Knows Best to Homer Simpson, and all of these things have, I think, adversely affected our society, and therefore our ability to govern ourselves in some ways. It's a challenge that we have going forward.
It seems like picking up on that sort of chronology, that trajectory over time that you're touching on, it seems that changes in the law. Let me ask a question this way. Do you think changes in the law happen and then the culture and society are sort of that kind of those changes in society and culture flow after the law has changed, or are changes in the culture and attitudes sort of precursors to or suggestive of where actually the law might actually be changed?
I think the culture is the key. I think the culture changes, the law adapts to the culture, our politics adapts to that. And I really think that's the key. The culture is the key. I know Peter Kraft wrote a book in the early 21st century, How to Win the Culture War. And I think the people of faith, we've lost the culture war. We're losing it right now. We haven't followed that. And I think that's affected our law, that's affected everything, and we have to win the culture.
And Peter Craig's one of my favorite authors too.
Oh, he's tremendous.
He just came out, now I won't remember the name of the book. He's got, I did the audio version of it, but he just came out with like a best of, It's called like 100 chords. Do you have it? Because I listened to it mostly in the car. And
is it Ask Peter Kraft?
Oh, that's it. Yes. Yeah. Ask Peter Kraft. So it is. What is his top 100 questions or something?
Yeah, he's ever been asked.
Yeah, and then how he answers them. So that's pretty neat because he's done so much lecturing and speaking and things like that. That's a phenomenal book.
Yeah, it is. I loved it. And he's tremendous.
But, yeah, my pandemic read right now is Jesus versus Socrates. So the
that would be fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
Who wrote that?
Yeah, the Peter Kraft.
That's is that Peter Kraft? Oh, wow.
He's got a whole series of those, right?
Well, and I just read his, you know, he did the books with, you know, that President Kennedy, Huxley, the author of Brave New World, and C.S. Lewis died on the same day. And he has a book where they have a conversation. And
between
I just read a fascinating book.
I just read it.
He has a conversation between Tolkien, Lewis, and Billy Graham on the Eucharist. And that is a fascinating book. I gave it to a great Baptist friend of mine to read. And because, you know, I think for us Catholics, the Eucharist is, you know, the source and summit of our faith. But and it was fascinating. And Lewis and Tolkien Peter Kraft's book, they're very, very close, you know. And Billy Graham is not as, you know, is not as close, but respectful. It's a fascinating book. Well, he's a brilliant philosopher. We're so blessed to have him. And he writes so well.
Yep. Gentlemen, we need to take a break, and we'll be back with more with Scott Cirk here on the Catholic Cave right after this.
You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, converting the culture to Christ through radio, featuring 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Do your friends a favor. Tell them about Catholic Radio Indy.
Think of all the media our young people are exposed to today. MTV, movies, what passes for entertainment on TV, song lyrics that are questionable or worse. Where do they hear the message that it's okay to be chaste and modest, or that it's not crazy to practice their faith, or to believe in a God who loves them and can forgive them no matter what they do? Catholic Radio is the answer. Be sure to tell your friends and relatives about Catholic Radio Indy. Most of us like to keep up on what's going on in the world and try to catch a little news each day. Did you know that you can catch the very latest Catholic news right on our website? We have news from Rome, from around the world, and here at home, updated every day so you always know what's going on from a Catholic perspective. Check it out. Go to CatholicRadioIndy.org and look for the Catholic news headlines. There's always something new at CatholicRadioIndy.org.
You can hear the Holy Mass every day at 8 a.m. right here on Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Tim O'Donnell, and still in the cave with Mark Tuttle, Scott Cirk, Kent Blandford. Hey, before the break, we were we kind of meandered towards the woolly mammoths and got into some COVID-19 book recommendations and kind of what we're reading, so which was phenomenal. And I hope we do more of it before this show's over because we need that. And but I want to go back to something that we were talking about just a little bit even prior to that, Scott. And that we were talking about law and we were talking about culture and how culture is the antecedent, so to speak, of where the law might, or changes in the law might happen or occur. But I want to get your thoughts on this. I thought, though, when it came to the law, that there the law also contained there were some permanent features to the law. In other words, there's some permanent, unchangeable principles, ordinance of reason, if you will, built into the law that really ought not to change over to, they're immutable. But it seems as if, I don't know, in a democracy like we have, let's say in the judicial system we have, isn't it possible that everything is kind of up for grabs, so to speak?
I think we have the natural law, the law the basis of that, that is always there, that has principles that are not changeable based on the natural law, the teachings of Christ, and other things such as that is the way we are. But then in that, there's always people that look at it and say it would be better a different way. I think the process is always that it's not. So I do think there's principles that are the basis of the law that are unchangeable, but they're always under attack. And then sometimes the law adjusts to it. It makes me think again of G.K. Chesterton, who just in the early 20th century, about 100 years from prior to now, but he said he could foresee that he would live in a world where you'd have to argue that the grass is green and that 2 + 2 = 4. And I think there's some of that. There's always people that want to challenge certain truths in life, and I think those truths are always subject to attack from man, but the natural law and those principles will prevail, and they are eternal and the basis for our legal system and even our culture, even though they're constantly in attack.
Because that's always been the criticism of a democracy. You know, the classical criticism of a democracy is, well, you know, the demos, the people, are fickle. And, you know, what they think one day, they're going to change their minds and they're going to go in the opposite direction tomorrow. And so, legally speaking, as far as laws and policy, there's no stability. You know, what we want today, we're not going to want tomorrow. And, you know, even in our system, you see the pendulum that everybody talks about of it's inevitable that, you know, we've got a conservative government today, we're going to have a more liberal government tomorrow, and then that pendulum's going to swing back because of the nature of a democracy, that we follow the whim and will of the people. Do you see a way, I guess, to kind of allow our system to stick a little bit more to natural law principles and maybe be a little bit more safe than that?
Yeah, that's an excellent point, Mark. And I think that goes to the importance of education, is what I was thinking there. I mean, way back in the 80s, one of President Reagan's education secretary, Terrell Bell, wrote a paper that basically said if a foreign government had tried to attack the United States, they couldn't do more damage than what the American education system has done since the 60s, is basically what he said. But I think our lack of education has hurt us. To have a great foundation of education, to know Aquinas, to know Aristotle, to know the classics, in that same point, you know, President Harry S. Truman in his high school, he had to know Latin, Greek, he had to know the major sciences and major math to get a high school diploma. He was the last president not to go to college. I don't know those things, and I've got a law degree. You know, I think the attack on education has hurt us quite a bit.
Go ahead, Mark.
I was going to say, yeah, especially in a democratic country like ours, because, you know, when you don't have a consistent education system, you wind up, I think, with more stratification within society. And so you wind up with people that are more educated. They've got more opportunity because of that. Therefore, they've got more wealth. And you wind up with a class system that, honestly, I don't think our government was ever set up to be in a society where we had distinct classes of people. And it seems like we kind of veer in that direction.
What you said there, Mark, reminded me of one of my favorite things I heard Peter Crave say, which is what he said, that in the 1940s, there were 3 times the number of farmers than there were PhDs in the United States of America. In the 2010s, there were 3 times the PhDs than farmers. And he goes, that's why we have a sick society today. And what he meant by that is, if you're a farmer, you have to know a little about everything, but be knowledgeable about everything. When you're a PhD, you're specialized in one area, but you don't have the full balance. And I think that's another thing that we've gotten to. We've stressed education, but we haven't stressed really knowing things. We've stressed you get a degree, you get this, but it's not, you don't have the backup that you had before. And I think that's something that's hurt our society. We'll come back from it. We'll get stronger. I believe in America. I believe that we will achieve those things. But we're going through a difficult time now. And it's reflected in our politics. It's reflected in our law. It's reflected in our culture.
What, I'll throw out a quick book, count myself. So along the lines of like emerging classes in the U.S., fascinating book by a very, very talented sociologist, Charles Murray, thinking it was 10 years ago, it was about 2010, came out with Coming Apart. And he really chronicles how, I think the watershed moment for him, where he picks up in this particular work of his, is around 1963, where there are some important cultural changes. But you wind up with, he lays out a pretty fascinating hypothesis or accounting of how we've gotten to kind of a separation between sort of elites and the rest. And a lot of that has to do with the vectoring into particular elite universities, and that through enrollment practices and things like that resulted in a high degree, a very, very never before seen high degree concentration of people with native intellectual abilities, and institutions like a Harvard that didn't exist prior to the last, say, 40, 50 years. So anyway, that's another thing. It's a fascinating read. I was gonna maybe hand you the one of my favorite toys is a 10-year-old was the Magic 8-Ball, you know, so it looked like a little round black ball, had the 8 on it, and you could ask it a question, you shake it up, and then you'd flip it over, and then you poof, you get your answer, and you're happy. You go, yeah, okay, that's how that's going to work out. So let me, it's a bit about telling the future, let's say. So let me ask you, Scott, to look into your Magic 8-Ball. So if we take account of the current situation we're in, with COVID-19, the pandemic, hopefully things, and it looks like we have good reason to be optimistic about things opening up. Do you see, in terms of the law or the judicial system, how it operates? Are there, you've obviously in your role have had to, I'm sure, make adjustments, right? Social distancing, things like that. Again, not to, purely speculation. What are you seeing? What are you seeing like down the road, like our how things might not return? What are some things maybe that might not return back to the quote unquote normal that we had, say, in 2019?
Well, yeah, I do think we'll have less, as far as the courts in particular, less people coming to court for sure. And I think, there's some concerns about Zoom and protecting it, but certain hearings, guardianships, adoptions, things like that can be done via conference, via Zoom, that type of thing. I'm doing my drug court that I have via Zoom and those type of things. The things that you can't do is, criminal law, that type of thing will have to be done. But it will be adjusted, it will be changed based on this pandemic that we've been through, and there'll be less people coming into the courtroom. They'll still have the right of the public to be involved, but the concern for the safety will be there, and I think it will last for a long time going forward.
What are some principles or guiding lights do you think that should guide people as we're transitioning? What are some things that you think absolutely should or are inviolable that shouldn't change about the law? And what are some other aspects that you think, that might be something that needs to maybe bend or change?
Well, everything that involves your liberty is the law can restrain your liberty. That will not change. But, civil cases and other things such as that, I think they will go to more a look to protect, to make sure everyone is safe, and we'll adjust that and not not having as much contact. But everything that involves the restraint of liberty, I don't see that changing. You have to be there. You have to be able to talk to your lawyer, that type of thing.
What about, do you see any changes to like the penal system? Because that seems to involve quite a bit of crowding. They were overcrowded before. I mean, how in the world, I'm being a little facetious, I mean, but how in the world do you social distance in a crowded prison full of, that maybe there's some dangerous hombres in there?
I think our sheriffs in Indiana have done a tremendous job, because I'm not aware of a major outbreak. I know our local sheriff in Hancock County, Brad Burkhart, we've had no outbreak, and he's done things to quarantine prisoners that come in and with limited space and right. doing that. And we have had to have a situation where, it's a situation where we have to balance, like work release. Those men can't go out and work and come back. That's been shut down, and that's affected things. So that's limited some options there, but that's just part of the process. But they've really put a priority on safety right now, and that's going to have to be balanced and tempered going in the future. But I think that's really been to our benefit, particularly right now in regard to the pandemic.
And you know what else?
We need to take a break. It's time to take our last break for the day. We'll be back with more of the Catholic Cave right after this.
At Catholic Radio, we love to hear from you. Call us anytime. Just recently, we found this message on our voicemail.
I'm a non-Catholic that listens to your Catholic radio station, and I just wanted to thank you guys. I listen to Catholic Answers and Al Cresta sometimes, and I think her name's Teresa Tommy. I listen to her and another show or two. I appreciate it.
Call us at 317-870-8400 and let us know what you're thinking.
I just called to say, even though I'm not a Catholic, I listen to your station.
So, what are you afraid of? Some people are so afraid of the pain they never face their own wounds. So afraid of death they never live. So afraid of being hurt they never form friendships. So afraid of failure they never take risks. Fear stops us from living. St. Paul had reasons to be afraid. From 2 Corinthians he said, 3 times I was beaten with rods, once I was pelted with stones, 3 times shipwrecked. I spent a night and day on open sea. I've been in danger from rivers, bandits, my own countrymen, the Gentiles. But he also wrote, who will separate us from the love of Christ? Trouble or hardships or persecution or famine or nakedness or danger or the sword? No. In all these we are more than conquerors because of him who loved us. What are you afraid of? Our lives are fragile, so fragile it's scary. If we look to ourselves for security, maybe we should be scared. So maybe we shouldn't do that. Trust him. Be more than a conqueror. This is Chris Stefanik from RealLifeCatholic.com.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
You can hear the Holy Mass every day at 8 a.m. right here on Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to the Catholic Caves. Still in the cave, Tim O'Donnell, Kent Blanford, Mark Tuttle, Judge Scott Cirk. Here's what I want to pick up in our last segment. Scott, you talked about, and I think we all can agree that what you'd mentioned in the last segment, that the law has a role in constraining liberty, one's liberty, and that wasn't going to change. I think that's it. But let me advance that just a little bit and ask you this question. You know, we've got a lot of constraints on liberty right now, I think justified, right, because of the public health safety issue, right? But let me ask you, what would going too far look like? What would going too far begin to look like?
Yeah, that's a very good question, and that, you know, that's a real, real danger with this crisis. It always has an opportunity, a plus and a minus. But, you know, if people are restricting, say, religious liberty, the freedom of people to worship, without a valid concern. I mean, that's, we've somewhat acquiesced to this, even though, like, we as us as Catholics, the most important part of our life is Mass, and we've lost that during this time. So I think every time we give power to the government for the government to do good, they can also take that away. And so those are just general concerns that I have. I think that's incumbent on us, the citizens, to ensure that the government always works for us and follows what we need, and that as we talked about before, our founders, no matter what their beliefs were, they were adamant it required a Christian or an ethical citizenry to make it succeed. So we have to watch that. We have to be vigilant about that, and we have to be informed. We can't just trust the government, so to speak.
Now, that's a theme that's come up a few times in the show of the need to have an educated citizenry, an ethical citizenry. But I'll be honest, you know, the law is so complex. There's so many facets to the law now that it seems difficult to be an educated person when it comes to matters of the law. Where would you recommend somebody start if they wanted to become a more educated, more active citizen that's up to date on what's going on? Where would you kind of suggest that they start to educate themselves?
The Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence. That's a good place to start. I'd start in the basics. I also think to have some knowledge of history. I think you should have some knowledge of Lincoln and his amazing life one way or the other. Read great books of great men and women who lived their lives for a higher purpose. He's just one I would suggest in that way, that there's many like that. But I think that's where I would start. I also think that's part of the weakness that we've gotten into since the 60s, is we've tried to complicate things where it would be better that we kept them, something like, I think President Reagan would say this: sometimes decisions are simple, but they're really hard. Right or wrong is a hard decision. It's simple, but it's hard. When we sometimes in our modern society want to make things complex so we don't have to deal with the core issues. And I think that's just, but I think going back to the core, the basics, and then applying it will help us go move forward.
Tim, I'm going to throw that question your way too. What philosophically do you see out there that people should read from a Catholic philosophical side to kind of get up to speed on law, what the law is, what the law ought to be doing, those sorts of questions?
I would probably go, I would begin with a couple of really good authors that have written well and speak well, and you can also access some of their talks and lectures on YouTube. A couple of people that come to mind for me, especially when it comes around law, natural law, is Dr. Budizhetsky. And he's written several books on natural law, and he's phenomenal. I actually saw him in person one time at the Acton Institute. So he was really good. I also would recommend Professor Robert George.
Oh, yeah.
Princeton. He's phenomenal, very strong. Again, these guys are both very, very strong Catholics and just brilliant thinkers. And Budizhetsky is going to come at it from a Catholic philosophical standpoint, natural law standpoint. Professor George has the benefit of being a lawyer or teaching law himself, and he happens to be on faculty with kind of a nemesis in this realm, which would be in Catholic philosophy, at least, the nemesis would be Peter Singer. Also, yeah. He's there, and he's got all kinds of wacky ideas that any right-minded Catholic would have profound disagreements with his understanding of, say, how far you take, say, animal rights, abortion, infanticide. So those would be just two to start with. And again, they have a very, very helpful. Another place to really ground oneself, I'll just throw out three for the sake of the Trinity. Someone I know, Mark, you and I both are big, big fans of, and that's Edward Feser, F-E-S-E-R. He's another one that really, if you want to, really someone who's very, very brilliant at taking Aristotle and Aquinas and fusing them together with an incredible depth. But to start, so those I would say are kind of more intermediate level to even advanced. Going back to it's what Scott said, the best, I think, the person who simplifies so many of these different topics that we've talked about today and others is Peter Craig. He just is brilliant at putting things in very, very simple to understand, which I really need and appreciate, simple to understand terms, simple to understand analogies, and the breadth of his work. What does he have, Scott? He's got to have 80 books or something at this point.
At least.
And on YouTube.
Yep.
So you mentioned again natural law. So for the sake of our listeners, let's break down natural law. When we're talking about natural law, what exactly do we mean?
Well, I think what I mean by it, as I've read into it and studied it, is natural law is these are sort of the first principles that every human being we can come to recognize through the light of just our reason. And so it has precepts such as, to run through a few off the top of my head, first one is, and natural law is a constituent part of Catholic teaching. You study the Catholic faith, formally you will come across natural law theory. And it entails precepts such as do good and avoid evil, life is intrinsically good and sacred and ought to be protected and promoted. Human beings are social creatures and ought to live in society. Human beings mate and produce offspring that one has an obligation to care for and raise. Another one would be, maybe the last one I'll bring up, is around education, that human, kind of almost drawing from Aristotle's De Anima, that human beings by nature desire to know. So human beings are knowers, and therefore education is a part of natural, we have a natural right to education. So those are some of the principles, and they're knowable by anyone by us simply reflecting or thinking about them, what it means to be human, and what elevates us to reach our full potential and actually flourish.
So Judge Sirk, how much of that is reflected in our laws? And you know, is this a battle back and forth to see this more and less reflected in our laws? Do we have a very natural law-based legal system now, or do we have a lot of work to do?
We have a lot of work to do, and I think there's a constant battle with it. You know, I think that's why Robert George is so great to read, and his books and his approach to that. And so it's a constant battle, but I think in the end, truth will win out.
Well, you know, truth, we're in Easter season right now, recording the show. Truth with capital T certainly wins out, because he's risen.
And gentlemen, that's about all the time we have for this week on The Catholic Cave. We'd like to thank Judge Scott Sirk for joining us this week. Everybody stay home, stay safe, stay holy, and with any luck, we'll all be back together in studio in just a couple of weeks. Take care of yourselves out there. And for Catholic Radio Indy, for The Catholic Cave, I'm Kip Lanford. Have a great weekend, and we'll catch you next time.
The Catholic Cave is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Replays of this program are available in podcast form at catholicradioindy.org. Comments about this program can be addressed to kent@catholicradioindy.org or by calling 317-870-8400. Did you miss something in this show or just want to hear it again? Podcasts of this and all our other great local programs are available 24/7 at catholicradioindy.org.